All right, welcome to Season 3, Episode 3, which is also Episode 75 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me is someone who did not get a presidential pardon, Hugh.
Yeah, I got a lot of tigers buried in my backyard, too, so I'm looking at some pretty serious time.
Yeah, I was looking through that list for you, so yeah, sorry about that. But hey, you do what you can, right?
Yeah, so it's off, moving to Ecuador.
Yeah, so what's been going on?
Not much, I'm doing all right. I was not doing all right like a week ago. I was in a pretty bad mood, and I probably had a little bit too much to drink, and I got on the internet and started looking at Etsy for video game themed face masks. Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't, but not a bad idea.
So I'm now the proud owner of a Qbert face mask.
Nice.
It actually looks pretty nice. People might misinterpret it. It's the grid pattern from Qbert, the cubes, and then a quote of Qbert's, whatever Qbert says when he dies, right in the middle.
So
I think like people that get it will think it's hilarious, and people that don't get it will think I'm making a statement or something. I just thought it was funny. I'm like, like, if you're going to get a video game face mask, I mean, there's, like, Mario, Zelda. You could get something mainstream that everyone sees and they recognize. But yeah. I wanted something that when people saw it, they're like, oh, Qbert, that's obscure. I think Qbert is not a mainstream character. You know what I mean? Like, if you ask people on the street who Qbert is.
Yeah, I don't think they have Qbert in Fortnite or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obscure. Otherwise I'm really looking forward to getting East 9 in a couple of weeks. I think it comes out like February 3rd. Hopefully I'm actually able to play it, when it comes in, I don't have anything worse going on. I just finished like the last, like I'm going to go basically from one Falcom game to the next. I just like finished Trails of Cold Steel 4 last night. That is on that's on PlayStation 4, and it's going to be on Switch in April. And East 9 is kind of the same thing. It launches on PlayStation 4, and there's going to be a Switch version, I think, in summer, maybe. The games are all originally developed for PlayStation 4, but they're all in the same game engine. Like, Falcom just uses one game engine for all their games. And someone had figured out how to port that to Switch, because the game engine that was originally created to do PS3 and Vita games. It's it's not super, I mean, it's way more cutting edge than anything I've built, but it's not a game engine for PS4 games. But there's a bunch of QA stuff. Like, I played some of their other games that got ported to Switch, and there's a lot of just sort of weird, subtle bugs in the Switch port of this game engine. Characters that occasionally, like, a limb will just kind of not be pointing the right direction kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, stuff that you've never saw in the PS4 versions. So it's just like some little nuanced thing in the Switch port of this game engine. But it's exciting. Trails of Cold Steel 4 is like the ending of multiple storylines. It kind of merges storylines from a few different RPGs. Pretty good ending. And then, East 9, those games are all standalone. I mean, it's the same lead character, but it's like Zelda. You don't have to have played a previous game.
Hopefully they get the translation right the first time around.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's the same company, but it's a company that's been doing all the ports lately. So I think they've probably figured, solve their quality control issues at this point. East 8 was the first first Falcom game they ported. So I think they just, I don't know what they were thinking. It was a bad, the East 8 first bad translation was really bad. I mean, if you have ever get a chance to Google it, there's some pretty horrible translation errors in there.
Yeah.
So that's about it, man. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I'm excited for East 9 too. That'll probably be the next, this generation game I'll play. I think, with a lot of the rest of America, a bit stressed out the past week or two. And so I just kind of, when I'm stressed out, I really don't get deep into games. I usually just play, you know, the easier dive-in, dive-out games. So that's why our Game Club games are really good for me this week. But I'll probably dive into some Switch games. Feeling pretty good again. You know, feel like I got a... I feel like, you know, the world's calmed down a little bit. So I can kind of focus again. And, yeah, so not to get political or anything, but, you know, everyone deals with stuff differently. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to concentrate on games when all the stuff's going on in the world. So, you know, but doing a bit better now. I actually saw... something I've been waiting to come out, just got pre-orders available, which I scooped one up. And so in March, I should be able to get the, or I should have arrived in the mail, the MSDEXP, the Mega SD Expansion Adapter. And so what this is...
You explained this.
Yes. We talked about it briefly when I got my analog Mega SD, which our listeners know is the... analog FPGA Genesis, Sega Genesis. If you have the Mega SD, that is the EverDrive type cart that can play Sega CD games as well. The thing is that if you plug it into the top of your Genesis or Mega SD or whatever, it can play Sega CD and Genesis and Master System games. But if you plug it into the 32X, it could play Genesis and regular Sega and Sega CD games, not 32X Sega CD. Now, what this is it's an adapter that goes on the side of your Genesis or you know, analog console and into the actual CD port. And so... you can leave your 32X plugged in at the top and then have this on the side. So through the side port, it will play the Sega CD games, the Sega 32X games, and Genesis games. Not all the ports, not all the pins from the 32X, you know, route all the way down to the Genesis cartridge ports. So that's why if you plug in the Mega SD through the 32X, you can't play... CD games, and you can't play what else? You can't play Master System games. So I have an old first gen EverDrive, Sega, whatever the Sega Genesis EverDrive is called, and I have this Mega SD. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have my analog Genesis console with a 32X on the top, the original EverDrive into that, so I could play my 32X games. And I could play my Genesis games that way. And then on the side, I'm going to have my Mega SD so I can play everything else through that port. So with one system, I don't have to unplug anything. I can play everything. I know that was a very long-winded way to explain this, but there's no other way really to explain it. And I've been waiting for this for a long time. It's kind of going to round out my whole Genesis setup and really simplify it. So again, that's on Mobius Strip is who released this, which is strange because Terra Onion is supposed to be releasing one of these and it still hasn't come out yet. So there you go. Kind of the my exciting gadget of this episode. I would love to know if our listeners have any experience with any of this stuff or if they're excited for any of this stuff. So if any listeners are doing a Mega SD emulation, you know, please email us, email@retrogameclub.net. Whew. Sorry, that was like, I don't know if I took a breath that whole time.
So the short version is it means you can play 32X CD games.
Yes, and also not have to ever take off the 32X to play everything else, too. Yeah.
That's good. Finally, you can play Scottie Pippen Slam City.
Calibri. Which will be a game, game sometime.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not a CD game, but it's...
oh, true. It's yeah, 32X.
Cool. I was trying to think, are there any... Other than Slam City, are there any 32X CD exclusive games?
There's Night Trap, but it has the just regular CD version. There's
a regular one in Supreme Warrior. Hold on, I gotta check Sega CD. Was there a regular Slam City? I think there was probably there was a regular version of that too. I don't think there's any unique 32X CD games like that don't also have a regular Mega Drive Genesis version.
I think you're right. I really wonder how different they are. Yeah, so there's what? There's Corpse Killer, Fahrenheit, Night Trap, Slam City, Supreme Warrior, and some Brazil-only ones. So not many games.
Yeah, and Fahrenheit might not have actually been released. But I have Fahrenheit. Hold on. Yeah, Fahrenheit's both. Oh, it's Surgical Strike I'm thinking of. Surgical Strike was the one where if you bought the Sega CD version, you could like send in a coupon to get the 32X version, but then they never shipped it.
Nice. That's funny. Actually, our next story has some Scottie Pippen elements.
Oh, good, good. Not enough Scottie Pippen talk on this on this podcast.
No.
NBA Jam is getting a documentary. I guess based on the Boss Fights book about NBA Jam.
Yeah, very, very excited for this one. I do see CBC all over this, so I wonder if it's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation making this. But yeah.
Could be. That was around the time that Canada got expansion teams. So it might have been really popular up there.
Yeah, good call. But yeah, not much. You know, it looks pretty preliminary right now, so I'm sure we'll be reporting this on in the future.
Yes. Shigeru Miyamoto's kids liked Sega games.
Big news. Breaking news.
Yeah. They specifically liked Outrun and Space Harrier.
Hey, two great games, right?
One great game for sure, yeah. No, I like Space Harrier is a game I really like for like exactly one level. And then I don't want to play it anymore.
I love that game. But he did say he was never jealous. It just made him want to work harder on his games. And he also, here's some good fathering tips from Miyamoto, that all the video game systems in his house, he would tell his kids, like, I own this stuff. This stuff's not yours. So when you're using it, you're actually borrowing it from me. So when I say you're done, you're done. It's probably a pretty good way to deal with all that.
Yeah.
So there you go. Miyamoto, legend and father. Do you ever watch Shrek off of high-density floppy disks?
Yes, every day I watch it at 5 frames per second or whatever this is.
Yeah, this is a article on Engadget, and some guy on Reddit squeezed an entire Shrek movie onto a 1.44 megabyte floppy. So that's 0.03% the size of a DVD.
Right. Now you need modern-ish hardware to decompress that. That's a very important note in here. Mm-hmm. But he's not running this on like an old DOS computer. He's running it on a Raspberry Pi, which is 1,000 times more powerful than any DOS computer you owned in the 90s.
Plus, yeah, it's hardware accelerated. H.265 video codec compression.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is the newest, most hardware intensive video compression at 120 by 96 pixels. At what you said, 4 to 5 frames a second.
Yeah.
But it only took up 1.37 megabytes, so he had some room to spare there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool idea. This is, again, one of those things that's very, very useless, but very cool.
And
Did you click through to watch the video?
Oh, yeah. And it keeps saying Game Boy Advanced. No,
you got to click the link to the article. So it's comparing it to the video. There was a Game Boy Advance cartridge with Shrek on it that you could buy, which is, I guess, near the same size. If you click, this goes out to a Reddit post where then you can see his, like the first 30, how much you can get away with, you know, fair use of his video. And it looks comparable to the Game Boy cartridge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Definitely less frames than the Game Boy cartridge.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a ton of frames, but it works.
That is so funny. Wow. So, good for this guy. He did it.
Let's see, medium, if I'm not over my medium limit for the month, I can open this, about Famicom clones. I've always wanted some of these.
Yeah, this one goes heavy into the Polish ones and just points out that a lot of kids, like, these clones that were probably not legit were their first taste of Nintendo, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I mean, these are definitely not legit. Yeah, but I would really love to own one of these. These, it would just be a cool little addition to my collection.
Yeah, this Pegasus is a good looking box, and it looks like a mix between a Famicom and an NES. And the weird thing is yeah, it has turbo buttons on the top, kind of like those newer TurboGrafx mm-hmm. controllers, and the controller cable comes out of the side of the controller.
Yeah, bad design choice.
Okay. Hey, it's still better than the Dreamcast controller.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Still better than the Dreamcast.
Wow. Yeah, so if you love weird Famicom clones, this is the article for you. And even if you don't, you should check this out because you might end up wanting one or needing one. Speaking about needing something, the world's smallest portable Nintendo 64 is barely larger than a Nintendo 64 cartridge. This Gizmodo article has a video of this new portable Nintendo 64, which is crazy.
Yeah, this is really good.
And to describe this to the listeners, it looks like a really mini Switch Lite that's almost exactly the width of a Nintendo 64 cartridge. And you put the Nintendo 64 cartridge into the back. This doesn't have SD card or anything. It just plays the cartridges mm-hmm. and has a little screen on it. Yeah. And this is something I would get.
Yeah, I think I probably would too. I mean, it's sort of weird. Like the games that I would most want to play, I guess I have 3DS remakes of them, so maybe not.
True. Yeah.
I'd probably get one anyways. I buy all these portable systems. I'm kind of a, you know, I have like the At-Games portable Genesis one that's like a Nomad. Because I want to bring a physical Genesis cartridge on a plane or something.
Is that one pretty good? I know At-Games are hit or miss.
No,
it's not good. No. At-Games are mostly mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's neat, but the sound is a little bit messed up. And if you write like a homebrew game, you probably, like in the game I wrote, I have like two different build files, and one of them is a separate build file just to produce something that will run correctly on an At-Games hardware. How to backup and preserve computer game or cassette tape. What's interesting about this tutorial is it was not what I was expecting.
Really? How come?
I thought it was just going to be about how to like copy cassettes. But mm-hmm. this is like connecting a computer cassette to your computer, but not like through a data port, but like through the line in, and then ripping, you know, pressing play and ripping the sound to Audacity. So you get like this really funky WAV file. That's the part that I wasn't expecting.
Oh,
I thought they were going to be cloning making an image of the cassette, but really they're copying the audio to a big WAV file.
Yeah, yeah. And and then you just play that WAV file instead of playing a tape drive, and you use that as your backup of your game.
Yeah, it's not an option I would have considered.
Now, I mean, in the unlikely event we actually have some younger listeners, games used to come on tapes before mm-hmm. they came on discs.
Yes.
Or cards.
Yes, like I had a Coleco Atom. And obviously, I've worked with the TRS-80 that had a cassette drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I personally never had cassette. I went straight to floppy. This is something I did not think I would ever see, but Bleem is back, and this is a PCGameN.com. I guess that's how you pronounce that. And so Bleem was the PlayStation emulator for PCs. I guess that's how you would call it. And for Dreamcast, right? Yeah. And they pretty much got sued out of existence. And if any listener doesn't know Bleem, B-L-E-E-M, definitely Google it. There's tons of cool YouTube historical videos about it. Very cool stuff. But they're back, and you can download retro games that I guess they're emulated, but they come prepackaged with the emulator wrapped around them.
Right. Yeah. So this is Pico Interactive, I guess, acquired the rights to Bleem. And they sell like physical copies of, I'll say, like indie and in homebrew games. They've been around for a while. In recent years, they've kind of like specialized on re-releasing a lot of Wisdom Tree stuff. I guess because it was an easy license for them to get.
Yeah.
But yeah, they picked up the Steam license, and I guess they're going to set up some kind of online store, like you said, where you can download PlayStation games and play them. Presumably these are going to be homebrew or kind of like weird releases.
Probably, yeah. But yeah, NES, SNES, Genesis, Game Boy, TurboGrafx, and PlayStation. So, yeah. I can't wait to see more about that.
I have a giant box copy of Bleem.
That might be worth money now.
Maybe. If it is, I might get rid of it. I bought it for like $2 at a some sort of rummage sale. I see someone selling it for $15 on eBay, so I'm not getting rich.
Yeah. I love this article. Moving on to Hackaday.com, retro computing with modern hardware, no emulation required. And this is a, like, you know how there's the NES Classic and whatever the TurboGrafx Classic Mini, whatever they're called. This is like a 486 Classic Mini. And it's a really cool little box. And it runs at 300 megahertz, but it's a 40. It's pretty much a 486 system on a chip. Comes with a VGA out. It has an Ethernet port and PS2 ports and an audio port. And it's pretty much built for playing like DOS and Windows 3.1 games. This is cool.
Yeah. So like years and years ago, I was at a Midwest Gaming Classic and Hyperkin was there. And I don't remember what product they were launching. But they had sort of casually announced that they were planning on doing like a DOSBox system next. This never came to life. The system was never released. But that they were going to do like a DOSBox system you could put like floppy disks in, they were talking about. And for whatever reason, they scrapped it. This looks better, though, because this looks like you can connect like old PC joysticks or serial devices to it.
Exactly. And now remember a long time ago, gosh, one of our first episodes, we reported on the PC Classic Mini.
Yeah.
Did that ever come out? That thing looked cool, but it was so different from this because it was like all USB outs instead of, you know, these PS2 outs. So,
I've got to go back and look at our old show notes and see what it was we were talking about.
Let me Google that now.
Well, the PC Classic. Yeah, okay. I'm looking at it here and I see the picture. It doesn't look like it's been updated. Yeah. The site has not been updated since we talked about it.
Wow. That's too bad because I had high hopes for this thing and I still do. It's slated for release in spring or early summer of 2019.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's sad. I want them to come out. This thing's cool, so I want both these things to come out. Well, the Hackaday one's more of a project, I think, but
yeah.
So there you go. We've been talking a lot about DOS gaming lately on this show, so we'll keep that going.
Yeah, by switching to Dreamcast. Circuit Gem, a new game that plays entirely on a Sega Dreamcast VMU.
Now, kind of.
Okay.
When you read down, when you go halfway down the page, it's actually, you take apart the VMU and you put a Raspberry Pi Zero in it with a new new screen and everything. Well, you don't. This company does. It's called the Circuit Gem. So don't scroll any further. Don't look at a price.
I already don't care about this. Okay.
How much do you think? So this is a VMU and a little like 1-inch screen and a little battery and a Raspberry Pi Zero.
$300. How much do you?
$235.
Okay.
That's insane.
And you would have to bring your own VMU?
I don't think so. I think they have new old stock, but holy moly. $235 for, I mean, that's like $20 worth of parts. If that.
If that, yeah.
Now, you know, there are some, you know, VMU fans out there, so there's going to be some people that, you know, that price isn't funny to. It's worth it, but not me, but still a little cool little gadget, I guess. This next article from callapple.org kind of blows my mind. New Excel-based Apple II graphics tool, and this is, like you heard me say, an Excel file where when you... The first many rows and columns of this file are just like, you know, the memory areas of the graphics part of the Apple II, and you put, you know, numbers in there and you scroll over and you could see what the Apple II screen would actually do. And it's very accurate.
Yeah. So you basically design graphics in Excel and then it spits out the code for you to actually, you know, put that into an Apple.
Yeah, you could do it both ways, right? It's two-way, I think. I could be wrong. So cool. And I guess even, you know, there's little tricks you can do where on an Apple II, you know, one pixel will be a different color than the pixel next to it, and then I'll change the pixel color somehow. I'm probably describing that wrong, but
yeah,
this actually supports that.
Yeah, there's something with the colors bleeding. There's actually an effect you can do on Genesis like that. I haven't played around with it. Where you can... I'm not going to get the technical details down correctly, but I've never enabled it. But essentially, like, you can draw the... You can change the color mode so that the adjacent pixels kind of bleed on each other a little bit. And it creates the illusion of having more colors than what the Genesis actually has.
Oh, yeah, I think Sonic does that with their... with the waterfalls and stuff like that, right?
Okay. I don't know. It could. Definitely could. I didn't play with things because I've never tried to make like a graphically impressive Genesis game.
yeah. But for you Apple II programmers out there, this is probably a really cool tool and a probably great way to learn about Apple II graphics. I mean, it's right there in front of you, you know?
Yeah, that's why I imagine this is more for people who are trying to, you know, learn how to do an Apple II game. Because it generates code for you. You know, people who have already been doing Apple II games for a while probably don't need it.
Yeah. I can't believe someone made that.
I'm positive it was like another game of someone who was tired of doing that stuff by hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This next article, I was actually inspired to put this in here because of the email we got last episode asking about, you know, our suggestions on how to run, you know, RetroArch and stuff in handhelds. That's not like a Vita. And this is a device that is expensive, but really cool. The GPD Win 3. And this is a little bit bigger than a Switch. It looks a lot like the Switch, other than it has that kind of PSP Go type feel where you flip up the screen for the controls, but the controls are still on the side of it. What's under the screen is a full keyboard. So
yeah, you wouldn't want to play games with that keyboard, I don't think.
No, but I think it's there just for when you have to type in your name or something. Yeah. But
so this is $700, it says.
Yeah, but what you get is an 11th gen i5 Intel processor, 4-core at 4.2 gigahertz. This is all in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
The fastest Intel, or one of the fastest Intel graphics. 16 gig of memory. It's a 5.5 720 screen. Yeah. It looks just like a Switch. It's really, this thing's great. If you're looking for the best emulator in the palm of your hands, I think this would be it if you have the money.
Well, and you can play a lot of Steam games on this too, I'm sure.
Good point. Yeah. And you have the controls. Yeah. Right in there, just like a Switch. So two analog sticks, you know, the A, B, X, Y buttons. It looks like a little touchpad there for a mouse, D-pad, and start and select buttons. So yeah, this is like the everything handheld. Very cool.
Yeah, we got a bunch more here. I'm going to get through a few of these. Zelda style Back to the Future Super Nintendo game that wasn't released. Okay, that's weird.
I guess this is just a scan from a Japanese magazine.
That's all that's left?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been cool.
Yeah, probably wouldn't have been. Follow-up article. We talked about Doom on Sega Genesis, and they've done some work on it, and it is now a lot better. It plays at 30 frames per second, and looks pretty good. I'd argue looks better than the 32X version.
I would definitely agree there. Yeah.
Yeah,
wow. What a difference some optimization can make, huh? So, yeah. This is also on that PCGamesN.com site. And, so I don't know if there's a download to this ROM, but, yeah, if you have an EverDrive, you can check out some Doom on your Genesis.
Yeah, I don't see one yet. I suspect it probably crashes catastrophically in some way. That's why they haven't done it yet.
Probably, yeah.
Halico, or possibly Jalco. I think Jalco is the correct pronunciation. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So I only half understand this article. So this is on Destructoid.com. And this is the Arcade Archives kind of game of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that is. I don't know if Destructoid has an Arcade Archive release of the week, or Arcade Archive is a thing of its own. I don't know what that is, but yeah, this game Rodland is a bubble bobble like that looks pretty cool that I never heard of. So I wanted to include this article just so maybe some people would learn about this game, because I sure did. It has good graphics. It has good sound. I'm not even going to describe this game. Just Google or YouTube Rodland.
Yeah, so it is a new on the Arcade Archives release. It and, I guess, Shanghai 3 are both recent releases. Mm. Shanghai 3, of course, is being a Mahjong tile game, which are always very relaxing.
Yeah, this... I'm definitely going to have to check this game out, so...
Let's see. Amiga 1000 is still getting new peripherals.
And this is on Hackaday. And if you look right between on this picture, of the Amiga 1000 and the floppy drive, you see this little device in there. Mm-hmm. And so now your Amiga 1000 has an SD card that plugs right into it. That's all that is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Yep.
I don't know what this article means.
Okay. This is on Kotaku. This is SNK devs once put Goku into King of Fighters 98. So in King of Fighters 98, before they released it, they actually had Ryu and Ken as fighters in there, just as fun.
Okay.
They knew they weren't going to release it, but then they decided to put Goku from Dragon. He's a Dragon Ball character in there.
Okay. That's why I don't know him. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And Goku is supposed to be one of the most powerful fighters in all of anime or whatever. And so, he was in King of Fighters for a little bit. So that's kind of fun. It never actually got onto a cart. So there's no way this exists anywhere unless the guy has it on a floppy somewhere somehow. But he said he doesn't think he does. SonicStadium.org, some prototypes for some Sonic games were just released. So Sonic Adventure 2, Sonic 1, and what other? There's a few other Spinball and Bean Machine. There's some prototypes that were just released. So I don't really download prototypes, but if that's your thing, check it out. Some Sonic history.
Yeah, I kind of like to see the differences, if there are any.
Kind of see where they started. And then we end on a bummer note.
Yeah, Terry Diebold, not a household name. In fact, I did not remember his name until I saw the article. But he was the person who found the Nintendo PlayStation prototype. He put it for sale about a year ago. And unfortunately, he has passed away this month.
Yeah, that's crazy. So some of our listeners have probably met him because he has been to a lot of retro game conventions.
I'm pretty positive I met him. And I don't know if him selling it a year ago was related to, medical bills or he knew something was wrong. I don't know. That's obviously it's a thing one would speculate, given the timing. He's fairly young and it's no cause of death, kind of not giving any details. But yeah, very sad.
Yeah, yeah. So sorry. We usually try not to end on a downer note like that. But there you go.
Yeah, it took me a while to find this article because I got an email. Midwest Gaming Classics sent out an email to everyone on their mailing list, just a couple days ago, mentioning this because I guess it's a big deal to them. He's been a fixture at the show for many years now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, very sad.
Yeah, that's just too bad, yeah. All right. I guess we should play some video games, huh?
Yep. Let's do that.
All right, we got Game Club. I'll do mine's up there first, so I'll talk about Bubble Bobble first. So, yeah, I played Bubble Bobble on NES and the DS. And so if somehow a listener doesn't know what Bubble Bobble is, it's a single screen platformer that has more than 100 levels, released in 1986 by Taito. And you play as Bub and Bob, two cute little blue and green dragons who I think their girlfriends were kidnapped and they had to go to Dream World or something like that. I don't know, with games this old or, who cares about plot? But, this game is what, spun off into Puzzle Bobble. And what are the other ones? Rainbow Island, I think, is a spinoff.
Yeah. Parasol Stars.
Yeah. Where some of those games you play as Bub and Bob, not in their dinosaur form. Anyway, yeah, you I don't know if you spit or cough up bubbles, but there's all these little monsters trying to get you, and you get them into a bubble, and then you jump on them, and they pop, and they're dead. And throughout the game, there are many, many, like I said, many levels. And after a while, you could get bubbles that have different abilities like fire, lightning bolts. And I played this game not long after it came out. I played it pretty early and I wasn't bad at it. I think I beat it in, probably 88, I would say. I remember beating it on a sleepover and we had to stay up really late for it, but we got through it. If you run out of lives and you're playing two player, you can borrow someone else's extra lives so you could keep playing, because the point of this game is to play as friends. You're on the same team. And if you beat the game alone, you get the sad ending. And so when you watch kind of speed runners or long runners play this game, they hit start on the second controller right before the end. So they get the good ending.
Okay.
What else did I want to say about this? So this was an arcade game, a beautiful arcade game. And the NES port is really close to it. It was one of the first games where I really thought, like, this is legit. And the song, I'm not going to call it a soundtrack because it's pretty much the same song.
It's like one song, yeah.
Over and over again. And it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And in the arcade and in the NES. And but after a while, it does make you want to become a murderer and just run through the streets screaming like a crazy person, or just gouge your ears out. But even so, it is a great song. This time, like I said, I played the NES port for a little bit, but my NES is in my basement and I didn't feel like being in my basement. And so I have this for the DS. It's called Bubble Bobble Revolution. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a legendary DS game because it was released by Codemasters. And it was released with a bug where you can't beat the game. There's a glitch where the boss never comes out at level 30. And so you're just standing there. So people who got that that cartridge could send it back for a bug fixed cartridge. And you would also get Rainbow Islands Revolution for free. So it was really cool that they did that, but not after horrible, horrible reviews. But I played that one, and it has two modes, a classic mode where you're playing almost, direct port from the NES or Atari one. And it also has a new age mode, which uses both DS screens. But if you play Bubble Bobble on Game Boy, it's a totally different game. It's still a platformer, but you don't have much room on the screen on Game Boy. So it kind of lets you scroll back and forth, like the one screen level that you're on mm-hmm. is bigger than your screen. You know, think Defender or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So this new age mode is like that, except it takes both screens on your DS, which is kind of confusing when you're jumping up from the lower screen to the higher screen. That really tripped me up a few times. And I know I'm going on about this game, but it's such a legendary game. It's hard not to. This was ported to everything. And I watched one of those comparison YouTube videos for the ones I really couldn't play. And, you know, some things I noted that I think it was the MSX port had some crazy like MechWarrior type mode to it. That really stood out to me. And what really surprised me is that there are ports to the Sega Saturn and the PlayStation where it's not just an emulator running this. I mean, these people really recoded this and spent the time to do new like Redbook audio music, but didn't really update the music enough where you really noticed it. So it's almost like you spent all this money on a PlayStation, but you're just playing just regular Bubble Bobble that maybe looks a bit more 3D, but it's not 3D. It's just a kind of a nicer sprite. I just thought that was insane. So, Bubble Bobble, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I played both of our games this week. I played on the NES Classic with my kid. And, I mean, I've never gotten really heavily into this game. We played through, let's say, 10 stages. She actually outlasted me, which was a little bit of a surprise. Mm-hmm. She seemed to have no idea what she was doing most of the time while playing it, which maybe was a factor. Like, I was actually going after enemies, and I think she was more trying to avoid them. But yeah, it's definitely a fun two-player game, because you can't, like, attack each other. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. like, make a mistake and knock out your opponent.
Yeah, yeah.
And it reminds me a lot of, like, early days of Overclocked Remix. Because in like, early Overclocked Remix, they used to do a lot of Bubble Bobble remixes in the beginning. I don't know why that was such a popular game to remix.
It's a really well-written song, and it sounds so good on the Nintendo hardware.
Because I do feel like it's fairly early. Yeah, it's... Yeah, OC Remix number 15.
Wow.
So that's pretty early is one. They have one other, but there was another really early one, but maybe it got removed. You know, they did, like, a purge of ones that were, like, too similar to the original themes. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the... I think this maybe... Maybe it was a problem for one of them.
Did to get good at this game, that you really need to learn how to or master how to jump on top of your bubbles and not pop them, so you can kind of jump around all the levels really quickly. That's a secret of this game. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Aha! Wait, I found the other ones. So yeah, it was OC Remix number 15, 212, 198, and 84. So that's all, that's kind of like all in their first year of existence.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Yeah, first year. I can understand why that would have been popular back then. Want to jump onto your game club game?
Yeah, so I picked Tecmo Bowl just to help celebrate the end of the football season here. Also played this against my kid who does not know the rules of football. So it was not a particularly close game. I like this because it's really simple. I mean, it obviously started as like an arcade game and, you know, keeps the very simple controls. You know, you have four plays. You have two passing plays, two running plays. And on defense, you have two, you know, pass stopping plays and two, you know, run stopping plays. And it's really easy. I mean, it's a very, very easy game. You know, you snap the ball, see if your receiver's open or hand it off, whichever play you chose. The balance is kind of bad. I mean, there's some teams that are basically unstoppable and others that are not very good. You know, obviously, like, team balance is something they, you know, they figured out in later games. But overall, yeah, it's a very easy game to play, and it's a lot of fun.
Is this a game you played back in the day?
Only a little bit. Only a little bit. I wasn't real big into sports games. I started kind of appreciating sports games many, many years later.
Mm-hmm. I think this was an arcade game too? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It started as an arcade game first, I believe.
Yeah. I played this on NES and, I think I only played it a few times back in the day. I owned both John Elway football and TV sports football, which are both very different than this. And I know those are divisive games. I love both of those games. And I can see why people like Tecmo Bowl better. But I don't not like Tecmo Bowl. I'm just not as good at it. And I'm used to the other game systems that the other football games have. So I think I'll still go back to those. But I definitely appreciate this game having the better graphics and probably better gameplay as well. I remember back when retro gaming was becoming, I'm using air quotes, hip. I want to say like 2006, 2008 was when it really first started to become a thing. And at least in my world. And I was reading about people have like their own Tecmo Bowl leagues, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't have those today, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say is you don't see that much with other retro sports games.
Yeah. One of the NHL games, I think 94, still has a very, very strong, I think it's NHL 94, has a very strong fan community that, that runs tournaments and does hacks to put modern rosters into the game.
I love it. It's so cool. Any closing thoughts on Tecmo Bowl?
No, no. I was just going to comment, like the John Elway football game, the first version of that came out about like 8 or 9 months after John Elway got completely blown out in the Super Bowl by Doug Williams, who did not get a video game. I'm just saying.
Well, what are you going to play play for the next episode?
I'm going to play Q-Bert. Since I bought this nice Q-Bert face mask, I might as well play some Q-Bert.
Nice. I'm excited.
How about you?
One. I'm going to go for a game I've never played before, Dynamite Heady.
Okay.
So I think that's
you,
Genesis,
I think you'll like this game. Yeah, I think I know your taste in games, and I suspect you'll like this game. I've played this before, and I know the style. I think you'll like it.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I'm excited for this one. And
I might have to do something weird, like try the Game Gear version or something, because I have played the Genesis one before.
Yeah. In our show notes, Zach linked to the only thing he could find is a weird prototype on archive.org. And he said it played fine for him, so we'll just leave it there. We have a few feedback items this episode. I'll get the first one here. Jess writes in, and he hasn't written in a year. He says that it's usually because he's, you know, on his commute to work, and by the time he remembers to, he would have written us, he forgot, you know, he had to work, and there your day goes. But he enjoyed the King's Quest episode, and the only one he really played a lot was King's Quest VI. He thought he got it for a Christmas present from one of his out-of-town relatives, but after you mentioned that it was a hot CD packing item, he thinks he probably did get it with a CD-ROM drive or a new computer or something. And he recently repurchased it from GOG. I guess they have a King's Quest 4, 5, 6 bundle that went on sale. So he jumped on that, and he finished King's Quest 6, but not before forgetting one item before the final battle, and I had to go back to a save, just like CR makes you do. It did come with the PDF manual for Sierra's copy protection. And, of course, he was that type of kid that had to read the manual before playing the game, unlike his siblings that would just jump into it, which I think I was a mix of those two, where I had to play the game right away, but when my parents made me stop playing video games, like bedtime or something, I'd bring the manual with me and read that. So the next day I'd be much better.
You all said. Yeah. Yeah. It's a mixed bag. I mean, obviously in the last like 20 years, manuals don't matter because it's all in-game tutorials now. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have that a lot back in the day. So often the manual did have like actual valuable information.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lost art form now, I think. He said we also mentioned LucasArts point-and-click adventures, and one that stood out for him was The Dig. His kid actually liked it and have their own saves, so that's pretty cool. I don't think I've played The Dig. I played so much more Sierra than LucasArts that I really should get my game on some of those. So in the very near future, probably with DOSBox Pure. It's winter. But, yeah, Jess, thanks for writing in, and don't worry about a year gone by. We love hearing from you.
I'll get the email from Majors here. I'd like his first story here. He played King's Quest at back in high school at a friend's house. Not a friend's house. His friend's mom's office, because they had computers that could run it. So his friend's mom would go in on the weekend to do some extra work. And since the building was empty, they could go in and use the computers. They'd have to install the game and then uninstall it before they left at the end of the day. So, nice. I like that. The things you'd have to go through to play a modern game. Mm-hmm. In similar note, Apple IIgs, he played at a friend's house in junior high, seventh, eighth grade. And the thing there that he would always show off is Task Times in Toontown.
One of my all-time favorites.
Really? Yeah. He says it's a lot like a Portopopia, which I mispronounced, or Shadowgate, point and click. Those are actually pretty different games. I tried to do the Portopia mystery game, just because I know it's like a hugely influential game in the genre. I could not get into that.
Yeah. Yeah, Task Times in Toontown is Rebecca Heineman, who was kind of on the show, just had some audio errors. So we interviewed her, but which was awesome, but I didn't get on the show. But one of her early games that is one of my first games. So check that one out. It's a trippy game that shows off what the Apple II GS could do. Sorry, tangent there.
No, it's fine. Always have tangents. It's fine.
Yeah.
I guess on something called social media, a thing I am increasingly glad to have quit, we asked about recommended retro gaming podcasts. And Majors, he listens to a ton of podcasts. So, I mean, so do both of us. But he recommends a few that I'm actually, a couple I knew and a couple I don't know. So he mentions 8-4 Play Podcast. It's based out of Japan. And it, they mostly talk about newer games, but then they will drop in mentions of mostly older Final Fantasy and Master System games.
Cool.
Doors and Dungeons. He says this is very acquired taste. Again, a very Japan 8 and 16-bit centered topics. Next one I know, the Intellivisionaries. They have a kind of mixed, what's the right term for it here, mercurial release schedule. But when they release episodes, they are very long, which is true. They do couple-hour-long episodes. And he said the big risk to listening to them is that you may end up hoarding Intellivision stuff after listening to them. Intarivisions, I'm sure I mispronounced it. I have listened to the show. And this is where they compare ports that were on all three Intellivision, Atari, ColecoVision consoles. And then it's in feedback. So this is kind of like this we talked about a while ago, that if you have a FPGA flash card for the Genesis, you can on East 3 replace the music with the either Oath and Felghana or like TurboGrafx-16 version of the soundtrack.
Okay.
Which would be that would actually be really fun. That would be the best version of the game if it could do that. And a little bit about MSX, you know, collecting and getting into that as a new thing. So it's a lot cheaper to collect than the X68000. And it's kind of neat because you see so many early NES, you know, things that become NES games like Castlevania and Metal Gear. But then a lot of games, you know, deeper in the library like Nightmare or Firebird. And then we apparently also asked about Adobe Flash. And this was
Zach asked Adobe Flash, what was your favorite like Adobe Flash memories and games, because it became dead this week. Flash is no more.
Yeah, that was missed by no one. And he mentions again when he was doing support for a computer lab, they would play a lot of Flash games, and there was something called Gimme Friction Baby that he enjoyed a lot. Never heard of this. And it's on mobile phones now. Or there's a very similar game to it on mobile phones called Orbital. Probably not to be confused with the British techno band.
Mm-hmm.
And my observation about Flash is I guess I will miss Elf Bowling and probably nothing else.
I worked at pretty much a Flash company, you know.
Okay.
We hosted Flash sites pretty much, and we actually did some for GM and some other automakers, and it was actually really fun. We got to meet some famous people like Bill Nye the Science Guy and stuff like that, so I had good times with Flash back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I have never worked on a Flash app. I worked for a company that acquired another company that acquired another company. I know that's the way small software companies tend to work. Mm-hmm. And they had a product that was written in Flash, and I unfortunately had to give the recommendation to shut it down.
I don't blame you. I never liked Flash. It's just, yeah.
Well, this was like a business tool written in Flash. This wasn't a game.
Oof. Ouch.
You know, it had like a whole back end and stuff too. Like, that's, boy, that would be another long story. That whole thing. But yeah, I definitely, so I'm going to skip through the feedback because I want to get to someone. Yeah, some mentions that they still play Flash games. Still dig up a few. I'm not sure how you play Flash games. I guess you would still do it in your browser. I'd be too scared to install Flash on any browser. Like, it'd have to be a virtual machine. Yeah, I don't think I'd ever install Flash on a computer I wanted to keep.
There's got to be some kind of sandbox or something.
Yeah, VirtualBox is I would have to really, really sandbox it. Some of the other social media feedback. Someone mentioned they played Bubble Bobble with their grandmother.
Nice.
That is good, yeah. Someone had a question about the East series, saying they couldn't find a good entry point. They want to try it, but they can't find a good entry point. And I would say just jump right, just start with East 8. Like, I honestly would just go for I don't know how East 9 compares to East 8 yet, but it's probably the best in the series, and it's really easy to get into, because the backstory doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to know the history of any of the characters.
That's probably good advice. I would do like East 8 and pretty much work backwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, it depends on what part of East 8 you liked best. You know, that may influence what other games that you like. You know, if you liked the battle system a lot, then yeah, you might like East 7 and Celceta. If you like the kind of story and like character bonding events, you know, if you like that stuff, then you might like Tokyo Xanadu, which is the same game engine, or East 9. I think East 9 is a lot like East 8, is my understanding. Or you might like Trails of Cold Steel, which is like basically East 8, but with a turn-based engine instead of real-time battles.
But if you want to keep it retro, just start with East Book 1 and 2 on the TurboGrafx.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I mean, if you're going to go back to East 1 and 2, that's a really good version. I think that version still holds up pretty well. The remake called Chronicles is a little more modern controls, but it's that game is really hard. Like, they really amped up the difficulty in that one. I think because in the TurboGrafx version, you could, like, level up. You could really get yourself overpowered early on, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But yeah, I would say start with East 8, and then or East Origins, another easy one to start with too, because that's on everything. I just got notification that my limited run games version of that is on Switch, is going to be coming in soon.
Nice.
So I will only own that on, that'll be the fifth system that I have East Origin on.
Nice.
That's
I only have it on 2, I think.
4. Yeah, it'll be, wait, Vita, PS4, Switch, PC. It'll be the fourth system that I have that game on, unless there's one system I forgot that I have it on. All right, so that's not obsessive at all. We're working through the last few here. One listener says they might buy the KFC console. I still can't tell if it's real.
Email us.
And the @Games Legends Core console. Someone says you'd be much, much better off just buying a Raspberry Pi kit off Amazon.
Hands down, absolutely.
Yeah. Unless you're buying it for like a children's hospital or like a senior center or someplace where you need a plug and play system.
Yeah.
Even so, you're better off getting them a Wii.
Exactly.
You really are.
Well, thank you everyone for all that feedback. Any of our listeners are playing any of the games we've listed, or have any suggestions, or just want to talk about anything retro video games or not, email us at email@retrogameclub.net. That is email@retrogameclub.net. And we have Facebook, that is facebook.retrogameclub.net. That takes you right to our page. Or Twitter @RGCPodcast. And we'd love to hear from you and play some games with you. And
we stay off politics and conspiracy theories and that kind of stuff on those, I assume.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's on our social media, it's pretty much a one strike and you're out kind of thing. Like, keep it games.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we're here. And no flash on any of those sites either.
I suppose not. I feel like flash games could have been a thing that were on one of those systems at one point.
Probably. Probably. But I think that wraps it up. So our next games are Dynamite Heady and Q-Bert.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with Q-Bert. That game is hard. All right. So thanks for listening.